38. Tubal. She lay very still, on her back, the sheet forming a cool, dark tunnel, and gave her body explicit permission to relax. This made her remember doing the same thing in an overhead berth on a tour bus, but with a sleeping bag instead of sheets, and foam earplugs instead of asking the desk to hold her calls, and setting the ring on her cell to silent. Inchmail had called it womb return, but she knew it was the opposite, really. Not so much the calm of not yet having been born, but the stillness of already having died. She didn't want to feel like a fetus, but like the recumbent figure carved atop a sarcophagus, cool stone. When she'd explained that to Jimmy Carlyle once, he'd cheerfully told her that that was pretty much exactly what he was after with heroin. Something about that exchange had left her very glad she'd never been much attracted to drugs, other than garden-variety cigarettes. But anything that shook her sufficiently, really hard, could get her into tube mode, preferably in a darkened room. The departures of serious boyfriends had done it, as had the end of the curfew, her initial major losses when the dot-com bubble had popped, the fact of those holdings having been residue of a serious boyfriend, if you wanted to look at it that way, had done it, and her subsequent, and she supposed possibly final, the way things were headed, major financial loss had done it as well, when her friend Jardine's ambitious shot at an indie music emporium in Brooklyn had not so unexpectedly failed. Investment in that had initially seemed like a sort of hobby move, something fun and open-ended and potentially even profitable, that she could afford to take a chance on, given the dot-coms had briefly made her worth some single-digit number of millions, at least on paper. Inchmail, of course, had lobbied for her to dump the startup stocks at what she now knew had been their white-hot and utterly evanescent peak. Inchmail, being Inchmail, had by then already dumped his own, which had driven acquaintances crazy, as they'd all believed he was throwing away the future. Inchmail had told them that some futures needed throwing away, badly. And Inchmail, of course, had never sunk a quarter of his net worth into founding a large, aggressively indie, bricks-and-mortar retail establishment, selling music on the full variety of what were, after all, Inchmail had insisted, dead platforms. Now, she knew, she'd been returned to the tunnel by that sudden stab of weird fear in Starbucks, fear that Big End had gotten her into something that might be at once hugely and esoterically dangerous, or, she thought, if you looked at it as process, by the cumulative strangeness of what she'd encountered since she'd accepted the assignment from Node, if indeed Node existed. Big End seemed to be saying that Node only existed to whatever extent he might ultimately need it to. What she needed, she knew, however belatedly, was a second career. Helping Hubertus Big End exercise his curiosity wasn't going to be it, and neither, she knew absolutely, was anything else Blue Ant might offer her. She had always, she'd reluctantly come to know, wanted to write. During the curfew's heyday, she'd frequently suspected that she was one of very few singers who spent a certain part of every interview wishing she were on the other side of the microphone. Not that she wanted to be interviewing musicians. She was fascinated by how things worked in the world and why people did them. When she wrote about things, her sense of them changed, and with it, her sense of herself. If she could do that and pay the grocery bills, the ASCAP check could pay the rent, and she'd see where that could go. She had, during the curfew days, written a few pieces for Rolling Stone, a few more for Spin. With Inchmail, she'd written the first in-depth history of the Mopars, their mutual favorite 60s garage band, though they hadn't been able to find anyone willing to pay them to publish it. In the end, though, it had run in Jardine's record store's in-house magazine, its publication one of the few things she'd gotten out of that particular investment. Inchmail, she guessed, was sitting up in business class, headed for New York, reading The Economist, a magazine he read exclusively on airplanes, swearing that on arrival he promptly and invariably forgot every word. She sighed. Let go, she told herself, though she had no idea of what. Alberto's virtual monument to Helmut Newton appeared in her mind's eye. silver nitrate girls pointed into occult winds of porn and destiny. "Let go," she said aloud, and fell asleep.